Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Education. Our website is insideed.com, where you can download or listen to podcasts of all previous Inside Education programmes. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. There are many ways that you can look at how good an education system is in a particular country. One measure is how well children learn to read and learn to do maths and science. You can go a step further and compare how well children in different countries perform on equivalent tests of reading, maths and science. Researchers in Ireland and up to 50 other countries have been testing how well children in our fourth class perform in these subjects. The reading test is called PIRLS, which stands for Progress in International Reading Literacy Study, and performance in both maths and science is measured on a test called TIMSS, which stands for Trends in International Mathematics and Science Study. The overall results were released across the various countries, including Ireland, on Tuesday last, the 11th of December, and published in a report titled PIRLS and TIMSS 2011, Reading, Mathematics and Science Outcomes for Ireland. Overall, the news was good for Ireland. We're not at the top, but children in fourth class performed well above the average in all three tests. In order to learn more about the tests and what they mean, I met up with the authors of the report, Emer Ivers and Aidan Clerken. Dr. Emer Ivers is a research fellow and Aidan Clerken is a research associate at the Educational Research Centre at St. Patrick's College, Drumcondra. When I spoke to them, I began by asking Emer to tell me why there's a need to look at how students perform across countries in reading, maths and science.
Many reasons. It's interesting to see how your country performs in relation to others. You might find you have particular national strengths and weaknesses. For example, you might be good at one thing, not so hot on others. So you compare yourself to other countries and see how your students are doing and whether you need to kind of pick up performance or whether you're doing quite well and your students are performing well and your teachers are doing all the things they should be doing in class.
So is it more then for policymakers rather than for information for parents or for teachers?
Well, it's certainly information for teachers, and I think it should be information for parents too, because I think most parents will be quite interested in how their children are getting on in school, not just relative to who they're sitting beside in class, but, you know, how does my child compare on the international stage? Like, if I want my child to learn a language, to go and work in other countries, how well equipped are they going to be for that in the future? And that's what these sort of tests help you figure out.
It's being organised on a similar basis in all the other countries that are taking part.
Yes, that's a very basic requirement. You have to be able to compare like with like. I mean, we do translate the tests, obviously. You can't have somebody in Kazakhstan trying to do a test in Irish or English. But broadly speaking, the tests look the same. They feel the same. They're the same sort of length. They're organised the same sort of way. And they're delivered in exactly the same way in different countries. And there's a very strong quality control element that covers how the tests are delivered in school. And we have national quality control monitors. And then there's going to be a hit squad of international quality control monitors that can appear in any particular school on a given day and just check how the assessment is being carried out and that nobody's kind of fiddling the books or anything like that, that everything's above board.
How do we manage then the fact that the curriculums might be different from one country to another?
PIRLS and TIMSS puts the curriculum centre stage, and I think that's very important actually for fourth class, because obviously, you know, what a fourth class pupil is able to do or not do on a test has to be very heavily influenced by what they're learning in school. So what PIRLS and TIMSS does is they collect a lot of background information about the curricula in the different participating countries. And that's all put out in a TIMSS encyclopedia and a PIRLS encyclopedia. So you can then compare what you know about the curriculum in the country with how the students in individual countries do. So, for example, some countries might emphasise a particular element of science, say life science. Another country, they might do geometry in fourth class. They might do it in another grade. So you can relate that back to performance on different elements of the test. And that's quite interesting in itself. But from our point of view, actually, we do compare the test items in terms of the content and the curriculum that we expect our fourth class pupils to have covered in maths and science. And there's a very close match between them. So there's not very much on the test that should be a major surprise for our children.
The countries that perform very highly, do we know if their curriculum is very different to ours?
No, it's not dramatically different. In all likelihood, it's probably down to a lot of other issues because content tends to be very similar. We're different in, say, for example, science in the amount of time we allocate to teaching science. In terms of topics, we're hitting all the topics that everybody else is. But the official percentage of the curriculum time devoted to science is only 4% in Ireland. And only Austria has a lower percentage devoted to science than us. Now, actually, teachers spend a little bit more time on it than that. We have data on number of hours per year spent on science, but we're still well below the study average on that.
If we go on then to how the test is conducted from country to country, Aidan, I wonder, can you tell us a little bit about what the tests are like, the PIRLS and the TIMSS tests?
Well, I suppose to start with PIRLS as a test of reading, it's a little bit different from the maths and science test in that you need, I suppose, a certain kind of core block of text for the pupils to read, and they can ask questions on that. So we'd provide them with a reading passage, and it would be, you know, nicely coloured and kind of spaced out, and they're generally quite attractive. The pupils tend to like reading them. And then following one of those would be maybe a list of 7 or 8 or 9 questions following that, and each pupil would see 2 or 3 of those. For the maths and the science, it's slightly different. As Emer mentioned, there's 175 items altogether, so obviously we're not going to give every pupil 175 items, so they'd be there for the whole day. So we split them into 14 different blocks of maybe 10 or 12 items apiece, and each pupil would do 2 of those blocks. So they would see maybe 25 maths items and 25 science items that would be independent, and there'd be a mixture in those between, say, for example, multiple choice items and ones where they would, you know, have to calculate something, then write either a number or an answer as the final result.
Supposing someone in one of the countries decided, oh, you know, like, I'm going to leave some children in fourth class out, even though they're supposed to be in the test, or, you know, they kind of just tried to rig the test in some way. Is that possible?
There are quite strict guidelines about this, and quite strict participation rates that the international consortium that run it require in order for your data to be accepted. So if you're excluding 20% of the pupils from your system, they're gonna say that's not right. You're not getting a clear overview of the system. You know, we need X percentage of schools to participate. We need X percentage of pupils, and those are quite high and quite strictly monitored. For these reasons, and I mean, for any people who are excluded, so you kind of would need to have a reason, and it would need to sort of fit within the guidelines.
It must be challenging comparing reading, given that the children are reading different languages in different countries. You know, if you're comparing, say, somebody reading in German or in Japanese, and comparing that to somebody reading in English, that must be challenging.
It is. It's, one of the, there's quite a lot that comes into it. I mean, you have things like the language, or the length of words in the language. You know, you find, say, for example, German tends to have very long words, so it would spread over more pages. I think, as Emer mentioned earlier on, they do take great steps, and kind of they go to great lengths to monitor that and to account for all that. And, you know, every step of translation and every step of even the down to the design of the booklet and the way things are presented to the children goes over and back between the international consortium and each national centre, and the international consortium sort of sign off and say, yeah, this is how we want the test to be, this is equivalent to the test in the other countries, and it's, you know, it's a fair representation of the test that we want to give. And so they, I suppose, try to manage that as best as is possible when you're dealing with 60-odd countries and 50-odd languages.
The children who took part this time, were they the same children who did the PIRLS and the TIMSS tests?
Yes, in Ireland they were. Not in every country. Countries that took part in the PIRLS and TIMSS test at the fourth grade, some of them chose to use the test on different pupils. I think possibly because it felt like it was less of an imposition on the pupils. But I think the fact that you get cross-study information on, like, how reading performance, for example, affects performance on the maths and science test, that's a lot of additional information, and we're finding that very useful, actually. So we're quite glad that in Ireland it was the same children that did both.
And have you got any findings on that yet?
That is forthcoming. That's a sort of a trailer statement there from me. The IEA are the organisation that manage the studies, and they're doing what's called an international relationships report, which sounds a bit interesting, but actually what it is it looks at performance of reading and how that affects performance on the maths and science test. And it's quite complicated. They're looking at every individual maths and science question that was asked, and they're rating it on how difficult it is to read, how much reading is involved, and how complex it is. And then kind of categorising them into low, medium and high reading difficulty. Then they're going back to the reading test results and relating how good or bad you are on the reading test and how that affects performance on the maths and science, irrespective of the difficulty. You know, like sometimes you have a difficult mathematical question that doesn't involve much reading, or you might have a very easy maths question that involves an awful lot of reading. So they're trying to interrelate all of that. Now, it's quite complicated. That's why it's not due out till the end of next year. But when it does come out, it will be quite interesting.
It surely will, yeah. And how did you decide how many children in the country as a whole to select?
With the 4,500 pupils that we sampled, we have quite a good overview of the achievement of the fourth class pupils in reading, maths and science. And so we can say that, for example, for reading, our score is 552, which I suppose in itself doesn't mean very much. But when you compare it to the other countries, and when you look at our, I suppose we know that 552 score that we've been given, it's reasonably close. We know that we're kind of, you know, between about 550-555, and so, and we know each other country because of the guidelines that the international consortium use, the IEA, to, I suppose, to ensure that the countries that participate well, and to ensure that we can compare like with like. So that's why each country would need this sort of a large sample to get a good idea of where the peoples are at.
And if you had an even larger sample, could you be even more confident in the result?
You could slightly, but it kind of reaches a point of diminishing returns where we had 4,500 pupils, and we kind of know we're plus or minus about 2 points of where we are. If we had 10,000 pupils, we might be plus or minus 1.5 points. So, you know, there's I suppose diminishing returns for the kind of the expense and the effort and the I suppose the number of people you have to get involved for it. So this is kind of a nice compromise between reliability and I suppose pragmatics and logistics.
And Emer?
It's worth pointing out, I mean, this is something that confuses a lot of people. These surveys are samples. They're not a census of the entire fourth class population in countries, for example. So because they're only a sample of a population, we can say, yeah, it's a fair estimate of the fourth class in the country, but it's not precise. It's within a margin of error. So when we provide kind of tables of how countries do, these tables of rankings that journalists love so much, they get very excitable because, say, there's three or four countries that are above Ireland, but usually there's only like a point or two in test score of a difference. And from a research point of view, that makes absolutely no practical difference. You might pick a different sample on a different day and, you know, you'll be one above the three countries that are currently above you. So it's worth bearing in mind for anybody who's so inclined and wants to look at the data. There are a number of countries that are above Ireland that aren't what we call statistically significantly above Ireland. And that's because you have to take the margin of error into account because it's a sample-based study. So when we say, for example, people say, oh, Ireland's 10th in reading, that's not great. Yes, but if you factor in margin of error, there's only five countries that we can say are actually statistically better than us. So that's a very important fact and something that's frequently forgotten by some of the journalists.
When Aidan was talking about the results there, he talked about, you know, students, the Irish students getting around 550 and things like that. But most people are used to getting test results as a percentage. Can you explain why you're talking about such big numbers for this test?
We go through the scaling process, which means that the items and the pupil scores are all kind of, I suppose, put in together and you know, pulled and stretched, and they kind of, I suppose, find out how they relate to each other. And this score that we've come up with, the 552, which is to some extent arbitrary, it could easily be put on a scale of, you know, it could be set with a mean of 100, but the way the scale is set, it's set to a mean of 500, so the numbers go above and below that. But the reasoning behind it and the technique behind it would be the same whichever number you picked. And it just means that you can compare the score of a pupil who did one particular test booklet with the score of another pupil who did a different test booklet, or Joe for countries, whereas otherwise they would each be doing almost separate, individualised tests. If you were looking at percentages, you would be looking at the percentages of the items that they did, which is only maybe 1/8 of the total number of items.
So what you're saying then is that 500 is the average score that a student could get or that a country can get on this test?
They're country scores. 500 is that would be, it'd be the... I suppose it's the centre point of the scale that they call it. The actual average for the countries that took part in 2011 is slightly below 500 for maths and science, slightly above 500 for reading. But they're country averages. They only work if you, I suppose, pool everything together and then come up with the estimate. And that's why we would use these, I suppose, as kind of a national level data. But we kind of tend not to report it down to the individual people level because it kind of becomes less meaningful at that stage.
You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website, insideed.com. Although it's difficult to generalise about what helps a country perform well on the international tests, one pattern seems consistent. Emer Ivers again.
One general feature you do find, though, is that there's kind of the Asia-Pacific ring of countries that do particularly well, Singapore, Korea and Hong Kong. They're the standout performers in the class when it comes to pros and cons.
So if we take, say, for example, Singapore, which did very well in all the tests, I mean, it was first in TIMS maths, it was second in TIMS science, and it was fourth in PIRLS for reading. Should we just look at what they're doing in Singapore and copy it here?
Well, I wouldn't fancy the weather, but it's a little bit humid. Yes, they do some very interesting things. Not always what you think, actually. They have an unusual pattern of teacher profession, for example. They bring people in mid-career into teaching, which is quite unusual and doesn't tend to happen so much here. They have it's a very affluent society and a very highly educated society. They place an awful lot of emphasis on continuing professional development for teachers. They have an entitlement of up to 100 hours a year of continuing professional development. Believe me, that doesn't compare with what happens in Ireland. They also have a very strong emphasis on principal leadership activities and autonomy within the schools. So you're granted extra powers, but you're held accountable if things go wrong. So it's a different model to what we employ here. The other thing as well is, one thing that we tend to focus on a lot in Ireland is everybody wants small class sizes. Well, that doesn't happen in Singapore. They invest in resources, but they don't invest in class size. I think the average class size was in the region of 30-something plus, 37, I think, actually. So they have quite a different outlook to us. But there's also a lot of parental pressure from very early on for children to do very well. So you'll have children being prepped for preschool, for example, you know, making sure that they know their ABCs or in Chinese or in English when they start school.
So I suppose, yeah, I mean, we have to trade off how much pressure you want to put your children under. There's so many different dimensions that actually influence these scores.
Well, to be honest, I think that's a little bit unfair to the Singapore nation because people seem to have somewhat of a negative attitude and assume that the poor children are sitting there, you know, like little robots in class. It's not. It's actually a very child-centred education system and they focus on the child as an individual and they put a lot of effort into that. Parents do put pressure on kids, but they want to make them well prepared for starting school. They want to know that they know the basics before they begin. But I mean, I've accidentally snuck in on lessons in Singapore. I was sitting in an open air art class, for example, and I mean, the kids were highly engaged with them. They were enjoying it, and it was an excellent teaching session. So it wasn't as if they were sitting there miserable. They were enjoying school. That's as it should be.
So I suppose one of the things is then how do we bring that experience that you had closer to Irish teachers? How do Irish teachers find out what exactly is going on in Singapore?
The Singapore Department of Education has a lot of information on their website. I suppose that's one source. But I think it's incumbent on all of us if we see that somebody is doing significantly better than us at something, then you wonder why. And you wonder, well, what am I doing? What could I do that they're doing? So you research it. You look it up yourself. Or you, hopefully, we'll be looking at some of the differences between us and Singapore in future reports that we'll be doing. But, a lot of the information is out there. And it's very child-centred. It's very, very much incumbent on the teacher to constantly keep themselves up to speed in terms of continuing professional development and very focused on achieving your targets, making sure you're doing the best job that you can.
And do you know then if other high-performing countries would have similar approaches to Singapore in terms of professional development for teachers, in terms of class size, in terms of teacher accountability and so on?
The class size is a tricky one. It varies from country to country. Some countries put emphasis on very small class numbers. They tend not to pay their teachers as well, though. So it's a swings and roundabouts effect. There is no one model of how you devise an education system. Different things work in different countries, but continuing professional development, I think, is pretty uniform. You need that. You need your teachers up to date and up to speed, and they need to know what best practice is, and you need to follow through on what's good and what works in your national context. But having said that, even within a country, there is no one-size-fits-all model. It has to be down to local needs and local circumstances, and you knowing what works best in your school and your community.
You've told us how well Irish children performed on the reading, the maths and the science. Within that, though, was there a lot of variation in Ireland, or are children pretty uniformly similar across the country?
There is a bit of variation. You can see, for example, the spread of scores within Ireland, as I said, the mean is kind of set around this point of 500, and the way that it's set up is you'd expect roughly about two-thirds of the people to be within kind of 100 points of that, so between 400 and 600. And that is what you find. You know, you find that some pupils score kind of just around 400 or slightly below, which means that they're performing, I suppose, they're finding the test quite difficult. They wouldn't be getting a lot of the questions right, and some of the ones that they would, you know, might be multiple choice where they might just be guessing the right answer. You also find then we'd have individual pupils performing right up, kind of up, you know, to kind of beyond 600, which means that they're performing very, very well. And, you know, they can more or less do everything in the test. And they, you know, if they were given a harder test, I'm sure they would do quite well on that as well. So you do get the spread of scores, and you get that in all countries. To varying degrees. I mean, some countries, I suppose, would have smaller a smaller range between the highest and the lowest performers. Some countries would have very, very large ones. We are fairly typical, let's say, in kind of where we are at the moment. But there is this range that it's not just that we have a kind of an average score and everyone is at it. There, I mean, as I suppose as any teacher will know, there's quite a variety. The one thing that we do with the scores is they're classified into benchmark levels as well, which is basically their skill sets for people. They're kind of, I suppose, nominated as being low performers or high performers or advanced performers, based on kind of what they can do. And so you can say a low performer can do these kind of simple tasks, but not the more complicated ones. An advanced performer can do, you know, all of these most complicated things. What we find for the maths performance in particular, which is quite encouraging, is that the low performers, we have more pupils kind of achieving at these levels in maths than we did the last time we did TIMSS in 1995. Previously, there would have been more pupils kind of who failed even to reach the lowest level, so that, you know, they wouldn't have been able to do the simplest task. In 1995, the last time we did that, there were 9% of pupils. So that's almost a tenth of the pupils in the country weren't able to do the simplest task in the maths test. Now that's been brought down to 6% of pupils. And I think for the international average, that's 10% of people.
A couple of years ago, we were disappointed with our literacy and maths results on the PISA test. How should we interpret these results in light of those earlier PISA findings, Emer?
Well, as a former PISA project manager, actually the results for PIRLS and TIMSS are broadly in line with, we've taken part in PISA in 2000, 2003, 2006, and 2009, and we've also done it recently in 2012, although there's no results for that yet. And the PIRLS and TIMSS results are broadly in line with how we did on PISA, apart from PISA 2009, where our reading performance in particular dropped quite a bit. Now, we have, in the Educational Research Centre, have argued all along that there were methodological problems with what the OECD did with the scaling back in 2009, among other things. I mean, we think there was a decline in performance among Irish pupils in reading, but we don't think it was anywhere near as dramatic as it was scaled to be. So we had a difficulty with the results as they were presented. I mean, this is a one-off. It doesn't vindicate us in that view, possibly, but it certainly gives us a wee bit more ammunition for our position. Broadly speaking, there's one PISA that's out of sync with all the other international studies that have been conducted in Ireland. So if you took an overview of it, I think it would be safe to say that Irish pupils and Irish students at post-primary probably are fairly decent readers, a bit above the average. They're probably average in maths, and they're just about a little bit above average on science.
And have you looked at performance, say, in terms of performance in disadvantaged areas or performance in urban versus rural areas?
Yeah, that will be forthcoming. What we did this time was we focused initially just on the achievement results overall at a national level, because that's really, from a kind of a presentational point of view, that is what the focus will be on for the first while. It's kind of the top of the pops rating for each country. That's what gets the attention. But come January and February, we'll be getting hold of the international databases. At the moment, we only have our own national data. Every country has their own, but nobody else's. So we've had to rely on the international body for the other figures. After January, we will be able to look at our data in detail, but other countries as well. So we'll be getting into far more detail about things like rural-urban differences. Also comparing Ireland, though, on lots of non-achievement issues, which actually I think is quite interesting, because we don't have much information on what goes on in primary school in Ireland versus other countries and how typical or possibly how atypical we are in some cases. So we'll be looking at things like homeschool interaction, pupils' experiences of school, their engagement with school. Like, our children like reading a lot, for example. They're not half as keen on mathematics compared to children in other countries. But oddly enough, they're quite confident about their ability in maths. We'll be looking at our teachers. For example, our teachers tend to be a little bit younger. They don't engage in as much continuing professional development. They tend not to collaborate as much with other teachers. We'll be looking at principals. Again, leadership activities for principals is an area we're a little bit below average on, so we'll be looking at that. We'll have a rather complicated set of multi-level models of achievement, which basically looks at everything, throws it all into the pot and sees how that relates to your eventual outcome, which is achievement. And we'll be in quite a bit of detail, actually, looking at the test items themselves. So currently up on our website, which is erc.ie/PearlsTims, you can look at the test items as seen by the children who took the test in 2011. You can see the percent who answered correctly in Ireland versus the international average. But later next year, we will be looking at individual items and saying, OK, we did particularly well on this. Why is that? We'll be linking it back to the curriculum and things like that and saying, OK, is it because this topic is covered in a lot of detail in Ireland? Or, oh, no, we didn't do too well on this. It's because this particular set of maths topics don't get covered till towards the end of the year. And, you know, the test was done in April, March, April, for example, things like that.
And we're coming near the end, Eimear. If you were to, you've looked at these results in quite a lot of detail at this stage. Based on what you've seen so far, what advice would you give to the Minister for Education and Skills about what he could do to improve the system based on what you've seen?
Well, far be it for me to advise the Minister, but I think something that has come up as an issue, and it's a fair point, is the amount of time that is allocated to science in our curriculum. I mean, officially 4% of the curriculum is allocated to science. And it's not just within schools, it's what happens in the teacher training colleges too. I mean, one of the things we found was that our teachers, relative to teachers in other countries, weren't particularly confident in their ability to teach science and to deal with some of the trickier elements of science teaching. So we have we're covering the right things in science, but we don't seem to be allocating enough time to it, and we don't seem to be giving teachers enough preparation in how to teach science. So that would be something that I personally would target. I'm not telling the minister what to do, but if I were a minister, that's what I'd be doing.
And if you were a teacher, what lesson would you take from these results?
Well, there are, taking a broader perspective, there are two areas in which our pupils are relatively weak. Now, it's not that they're weak relative to the rest of the world, but relative to performance within Ireland, reasoning seems to be a difficulty in maths and science. And this will be kind of higher order thinking processes. It's hard to explain in simple English, but we're good at basic number facts and very simple numbers and stuff like that. We're good at that. But when it comes to two or three step problems in maths or in science and having to think, I suppose, think outside the box, basically, too. Apologies for the cliche, but that's essentially what it is. Our children are weaker on that than they are in other areas for maths and science. So that's something you should focus on as a teacher, perhaps.
And do you ever see a day where there won't just be tests in reading, maths and science, but say, for example, PE or history or geography could be included in these international studies?
I suppose the only answer I can give to that is that, as far as I'm aware, there isn't anything like that at the moment. I would imagine that, I suppose, the way that most countries, as you can imagine, are trying to focus on reading, maths and science for the existing tests. I mean, a lot of countries are trying to kind of pull themselves up the rankings as they're presented. And so I would imagine that's going to be the ongoing focus for a lot of it. There is an international assessment of civics and citizenship that the IEA, the body who run these tests, also do at second level, called ICCS, the International Civics and Citizenship Study, I think. There are kind of moves, you know, in that direction, and it is something that they've kind of started looking beyond, I suppose, the more basic kind of reading, math, science as the default position. But I would imagine it'll be a while before it kind of gets expanded too far beyond that. It would be interesting to see now, so hopefully.
And that was Aidan Clerken from the Educational Research Centre concluding my interview with him and his colleague Dr. Eimear Ivers on the Pearls and Thames results. Well, that's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on InsideEd.com or on iTunes. You can email me at InsideEducation@DublinCityFM.ie. Thanks to my guests, Eimear Ivers and Aidan Clerken from the Educational Research Centre. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening. Thank you.